This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Glad to be with you today. We're going to talk a lot of sports with you today. We're going to start out talking with John Neal from the Detroit News and talk about the Detroit Red Wings. So let's bring in John and talk a little bit about the Wings. John, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Earl. How are you?
Hey, doing good and looking forward to the spring game. Are you going to be coming down for the spring game, or are you probably still be in Detroit doing some things?
Yeah, I haven't figured out my schedule yet. We're supposed to be covering hockey games right about now.
Yeah,
but we're all kind of scrambling around. No, yeah, it is a strange feeling. It's been I had to look it up yesterday. Actually, this is the first time the Wings have been done in April since 2003, when a guy named Mike Babcock coached the Anaheim Ducks past the Red Wings in the first round in a sweep. So this isn't a normal feeling around the place they like to call Hockey Town, that's for sure.
Yeah, so what do you think? Do you think they're going to make a big plunge into free agency or just rely on the draft?
No, I mean, they're going to try to make a big splash in free agency, and I tried to warn people last summer that was sort of the plan, really, because last summer we had a free agent frenzy, lots of huge dollars thrown around by a lot of teams trying to spend their way up to the salary floor in this salary cap world the NHL has created for itself, and the Wings have made some offers to some guys that they would have liked to add and probably would have made their team a little better and a little deeper this season, but some of those offers were doubled and or in length and term, you know, in length in dollars and term. And so what they ended up with was some extra money under the cap. They've always been to the cap, and I think people were alarmed to see that, you know, they had $5 million or so under the cap and didn't spend it. And then came the trade deadline. Things were rolling. They were in, you know, had that amazing winning streak and looked like a president's trophy type team in the regular season, but decided to stand pat at the deadline because they didn't see a deal out there that they thought made sense, and which I think some people, and myself included, thought was a bad idea. But nonetheless, you know, they're saving their money, and the Wings have never saved their money for as long as we can remember. But long story short, the reason was this summer, because there's a couple of guys out there they've had their eye on for a while, and we've all mentioned the names now in the last, you know, few months, but I wrote about it last summer. Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, who just helped eliminate them in the playoffs with Nashville, are two guys that are, you know, 1A and 1B on their list of free agents. Now, the trick is, can you pry those guys, you know, will those guys come free July 1st? You know, their teams would love to re-sign them, and both have opted not to re-sign up till now, but will they make it to July 1st in free agency? And then, of course, the big question is, will Detroit be able to land him if they do? And that's the gamble, that's the hope, that's the plan, and plan B, it looks a lot less enticing, not only to Red Wings fans, but also Red Wings, you know, front office executives. So we'll see. It's going to be an interesting summer. They're going to try to make a big splash. It's easier said than done, though.
Yes, John, that's one thing. When I see these teams signing these players to these really long-term deals,
right.
You know, I know they're trying to get underneath the cap in some kind of way, but yet if you have to sign a player for 10 to 12 years, that could be defeating, especially after a couple of years ago. We've seen the situation, I think, with a goalie that signed, I think, what, with Boston? I forgot with the team. And,
yeah, no, there's all sorts of mm-hmm. And that's the thing. They've done, you know, you have to do your research, and you have to decide, is this really a guy we want around basically till the end of his career? Because that's essentially what you're saying when you sign these deals. And the Wings have done a few of them. Some other teams have done some that they already regret, you know, and we've got Roberto Luongo is on the way out in Vancouver, who, you know, so I can't even remember what year, you know, Social Security will run out before this guy's contract runs out, and that's what we've got a few. I mean, Philadelphia has one with Brizgalov, who's been a disaster already in the playoffs for them. And so, yeah, that's the big question. You'll front load them. You'll see guys, you know, with, you know, salaries that run the length, but really at the end of it, they're very tradable contracts. Like, for instance, Johan Franzen has one of those in Detroit. But nonetheless, yeah, you have to decide, is this a guy we want to, and really the Wings have decided, as far as I can tell, that these are two guys they wouldn't mind, you know, signing up with, you know, for the, essentially for the rest of their careers. And the thing is, you know, there's a couple of guys this summer, and then there's a big drop-off, you know, at both positions, and then next summer there's a few other guys, but they really don't want to wait till next summer, and the fans definitely don't want to wait till this summer, because three straight years of second round, first round exits is not what they're accustomed to here. And you know, like I said, April is not a time for, you know, hockey to be over in Detroit. At least it hasn't been for the last decade and a half.
Yes. Now, when you look at this team, is it the team that does need a little tweaking, or does it need a massive overhaul?
Yeah, I think in between. I think it's closer to the former, in that what they need, and what I've said all along, is, you know, their stars, their core player, you know, star attractions, you know, premium players on a roster full of talent, but guys, you know, Datsyuk's, what, 33, Zetterberg's in his 30s, Franzen's 30 plus now. Obviously, Lidstrom is, you know, close to retirement, and that's, you know, we'll talk about that, I'm sure. But those core guys are, you know, 30 and over. And they've always had an influx of young star, you know, or star players over the years. Usually they've been more veteran types because Mikulich has just been able to go out and spend and buy, you know, be pre-cap. Now, in the cap era, they traded away a ton of draft picks from 19 and Ken Holland will tell this to anybody who wants to listen, but it's true. They traded away a lot of draft picks over those years as they were chasing the cup year after year. From 95 till about 02-03, they traded away most of their first-round picks. And those are the guys who right now would be your 27, 8-year-old stars like Zach and Ryan Suter, et cetera. So they haven't had those guys coming up through the pipeline. They're homegrown, you know, star guys. And so they're overdue for going out and grabbing one in free agency, and that's what this summer is going to be about. And if not this summer, then that's what next summer is going to be about. Because, like I said, those guys they've got are still, you know, Datsyuk is still one of the best players. If, you know, you could argue he's the best player, best two way forward in the game. And Zetterberg proved again in this playoffs what a clutch guy he can be for this team. But they're getting closer to the end of their prime, if not, you know, the downside of their career. So now it's not now or never, but it's getting to that point.
Yes, and now Nashville, the team that beat them, as you know, that was a pretty big team. I mean, most of the time, hockey teams aren't that big. Do the Wings necessarily feel they just got to get a little faster, or do they have to get a little bit physical, or something somewhere in between?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think what Nashville was deeper as much as anything else. And that, part of that was because they wanted the trade deadline. And Nashville's an interesting case because that's a team that has new ownership now that is promising to spend money, whereas, you know, before they were in a market that just couldn't afford to. And I still don't think that's a market that can afford to spend in the cap. Now we'll see. But they're kind of going for broke this year. And so they went out at the deadline and added a few guys, a guy that the Wings were at least interested in, although I don't know that he would have made a difference. Paul Gostad, it would be that guy, and they gave up a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick for him, for a guy who doesn't score and probably isn't going to be around beyond this year. But they went out and did that, you know, primarily because they knew they've got to make it a deep run in the playoffs, if not get to the Cup Finals, in part to convince Ryan Suter to stick around, that they're serious about winning there. And then beyond that, to convince Shea Weber, who's a free agent next summer, the same thing. And so they were kind of operating from two different mentalities there in some ways. But I think they would have liked to, and I know Mike Babcock came out right out and said it, but they wanted to get a bigger winger because they knew that was lacking. And at the same time, was the price there? You could argue that it wasn't a fair price to acquire somebody, and there wasn't a whole lot available at the deadline. They looked and they tried, they didn't find it. So yeah, that's the question. If they could use some more size on the wing, they could use better depth, and better speed in those third and fourth lines. But that was one of the real tough losses for them toward the end of the season, and then sort of again in the playoffs with Darren Helm, who's their fastest skater and a guy who's a real energy, difference maker, I think, in the playoffs, and he's proven it in the last few years. He goes down with a knee injury in March, and then just when he comes back, he makes it 3 minutes into his first game and has that awful, laceration of his wrist that's going to essentially take him, months to recover from. And that really torpedoed, I think, at least getting out of that first round for the Wings. And once you get out of the first round of the playoffs, it's anybody's game. So, they definitely need to get some more youth in that, forward core. And it's coming. I think it's still a couple years away from, internally from guys they've got coming up in the minors and juniors. So, there probably will be some more tweaking in free agency beyond those big names that we talked about. But I don't think it's needs. You don't have to blow this thing up. And, this team was essentially a President's Cup, President's Trophy type regular season team. In the playoffs, they could probably be a little tougher and a little more harder to play against. But, you look at the rest of the league, the top scoring teams are all out. It's pretty remarkable that Pittsburgh's out, Vancouver's out, Chicago's out, Detroit's out, San Jose's out. So, the model is flip a coin once you get into the playoffs. That's really what it takes to win in the postseason these days.
Yes, because the Stanley Cup playoffs are the best. When you look at all the pro sports, I think there's no doubt that the hockey playoffs are the best, because any team that gets in, it's like all you have to do is just get into the playoffs and you've got a chance to win the Stanley Cup. I think that's the only sport we can say you got a legitimate chance of winning, whether you're 1 or 16 or 1 through 16.
Yeah, I know. And I mean, just the notion that an 8 could beat a 1 in both conferences, this year, I think it would be the first time ever. But just that's impossible in the NBA. We all know it. And, home ice obviously doesn't mean a whole lot. To me, home ice, and I think we'll see it maybe this week, but home ice advantage and the reason for really working hard to get it is it's essentially for that Game 7, just the pressure of a Game 7 if you're I'd much prefer, and I think the stats back it up, home ice in Game 7 matters. But beyond that, in the playoffs this year, the home teams have a losing record, I think, still. So, it's a crapshoot, and that's one of the beauties of it. You could argue that's one of the, things that a lot of hardcore, old-time hockey fans don't like about Gary Bettman's NHL is the parity that some would say has ruined it, and I think TV executives probably aren't thrilled with Phoenix, the Western Conference Final Four, which is, Phoenix, L.A., Nashville, and St. Louis. That's not exactly a ratings bonanza, but, that's what they've got.
Okay. Hey, John, I want to thank you for joining me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And, hey, we'll get together and talk again. We'll be talking some of those other sports. I know you cover some of everything.
We'll be all over the Tigers, and I'll be heading over to Allen Park tomorrow for the draft. So we got... It's never a dull moment, that's for sure.
You got that right, buddy. Hey, it's good talking with you. We'll talk to you again real soon, my friend.
Okay, thanks, bro.
Thank you.
See ya.
Bye-bye. And that's John Neal from the Detroit News, fine columnist that works for the news. The time, 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Marco Rubio fans the Veep talk.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years from now, if I do a good job as vice president, I'm sorry.
5 more primaries. The first state may be Newt's last stand. Mitt and Obama return to campus, and John Edwards faces a jury. I'm Neil Conan. Ken Rudin joins us. The Political Junkie returns. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
We're expecting some rain today, partly sunny with a high of 60. Tonight, rain and a slight chance of thunderstorms, the low 45. Cloudy tomorrow, maybe rain until midday, then turning partly sunny, the high 55. Friday, mostly sunny, the high 52. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527. Toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR in East Lansing. And more importantly, though, we want you to spread the word around, tell everyone you know you can enjoy sports every single day right here on AM 870 WKAR. And now we're going to talk a little basketball with our good friend Mick McKay from the Detroit Free Press. And let's bring in Mick. Mick, how you doing, my friend?
Hi, Earl. I'm not real comfortable with the term friend as it relates to you. How about acquaintance?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
Hey, Mick, I wanted to ask you a little bit today about the new U of M has hired a new women's basketball coach with Bethy Errico. I had that in front of me, but I don't have it in front of me
Kim
right
Barnes,
now.
Kim Barnes.
And how do you expect think she'll do with there? I mean, you know, Michigan hasn't beaten Michigan State only once in the last 20 games, so I know that's got to be obviously a factor in that's something they're going to want her to do for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But, you know, at the press conference, you think that they're, you know, that they want her to do is win the national championship.
Mm-hmm.
And how well she does is up to Dave Brandon, their athletic director. Is he going to give her the same support that Michigan State is giving Susie Merchant? And, you know, first of all, you have to be able to handle that support and be able to coach and recruit and do everything like Susie has done at Michigan State. Now, I think Kim is capable of doing those things, but is she going to get the support to be able to do that? Because, frankly, Michigan has never, ever given their women's basketball coach the support that he or she needs to really be able to compete with Michigan State and be able to go after and try and do the things that Susie Merchant's done at Michigan State. And, you know, are they really serious about women's basketball at this time? I think having Lisa Savory, who played at Cadillac and then at Brigham Young, having her overseeing the women's basketball program is a big improvement at the University of Michigan. Lisa's the one. Lisa was an assistant for Susie at Eastern Michigan. But having Lisa, she's the one who found Kim and said, this is the person we have to hire. But I think Kim has done a lot in her career at St. John's. I don't think she was the home run that Cokies Washington would have been had they hired Cokies from Penn State, but I think she is certainly a solid choice and a good choice, and I think in the long run she could end up being better than Cokies.
Yes, and of course, she broke that 99-game winning streak against Connecticut.
Uh-huh.
How good do you think her team was? Because I'd heard that her team was okay. It wasn't a great team, but it was an okay team, and that Connecticut just wasn't that good this year.
Well, Connecticut was pretty good. They got to the Final Four. I mean, it wasn't a vintage Connecticut team that, you know, has won national championships before, but they were a good team. And St. John's did get to the Sweet 16, and to get there, they had to beat Oklahoma at Oklahoma. So I think she did a really good job, and I think they were going to be good next year too. But, you know, the fact that she wanted to go to Michigan, and I'm sure, you know, for the first time ever, Michigan is going to step up to the plate and pay the coach like a big-time program does. And so, I mean, that would be because, you know, a lot of people say, why in the world would you come to Michigan? And, you know, I mean, they pull out this, and she says that, you know, it's University of Michigan, for God's sake. Well, yeah, but it is the University of Michigan. But guess what? They don't run out of the tunnel on Saturday. Okay? I mean, when the Fab Five was at Michigan, no women's program in the country had the number of elite players visit there than University of Michigan's women's program. I mean, they came because they wanted to hang out with the Fab Five, but they could never close the deal. Trish Roberts was incapable of sealing the deal back then. The success in football does not translate to the in basketball. It hasn't so far. But she did a very good job. She worked her way up. One thing I like is she worked her way up with Division II schools, you know, like Susie starting out at Saginaw Valley. And, you know, she paid her dues, and now, you know, this is a chance. But it won't be easy right away.
Yes, when you look at Michigan's basketball programs, both of them, how long do you think it'll take them to catch up and to be really competitive in each conference? I mean, basketball is finally starting to come around. John Beilein has done pretty well at that. But the women, do you think they're far away or maybe just a year or two?
Oh, they're far away. I think this team that she will inherit does not play the style that she wants to play. So that's going to be an adjustment. It'll take a while. I mean, like Susie, I mean, she did a terrific job taking kids who did not fit her personal system, and Susie adjusted her system to fit the kind of players she had. And the fact that she was able to win and then go to the NCAA and, you know, her second year on, I thought it was remarkable. You know, and Kim's going to have to do the same thing, and it's not going to be easy.
Yes, that's certainly going to be a challenge, and especially you know, in a sport like basketball, which has so much upside, you know, it's going to take some work to bring you up to speed here in the Big Ten, isn't it?
Oh yeah, and now one of the reasons she left the Big East is because the Big Ten is not the Big East at the highest level.
Yes,
you know, I mean, they got UConn and Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And. Rutgers and Louisville's going to be really good. I mean, that's a difficult conference at the high end. But it doesn't take as much to be able to compete for a championship in the Big Ten as it does to be able to compete for a championship in the Big East. But it's going to be difficult. My question is, how many of their freshmen will be able to help next year? You know, Madison Rostovsky, I think she can be a good player in the Big Ten eventually. Kelsey Mitchell at Inkster, I mean, is she even going to make the test score? And they've got a couple other kids who I heard were injured during their senior year of high school. So, and then you take away what they're losing. They only lose a couple players, but they were key contributors at Michigan this year. Next year could be a very difficult season for Kim.
Yes, that's the challenge it's going to be and for Michigan. And of course, Susie's got her own problems here with leadership and a few players that just graduated. Two of her best players graduated. So it's going to be she's not coming at a time that's too bad, because Susie's going to be doing a little bit of retooling next year. So maybe it's not too bad that Kim's coming in at this time.
Yeah, but I really like the freshman that Susie's coming in. I mean, the recruits that Susie has are night and day. Considerably better than the freshman Michigan has coming in. I think Michigan State, I'm not saying that Michigan won't be able to beat Michigan State next year in a women's basketball game, but I think that there's still going to be a big separation between the two.
Yes, and that's the thing with women's basketball. But the good thing about women's basketball is that the sport overall is getting more publicity, wow. It's getting more attention. It's a sport that's really coming to the forefront, isn't it, Mick?
No.
You don't think so?
Well, this year was the first time ever that in the Final Four, there wasn't a single newspaper other than USA Today without a direct connection to one of the four participants. Mm-hmm. Washington Post wasn't there. Chicago didn't send anybody. Detroit didn't send anybody. I think they need to do something drastic with the women's game, because I think the regular season is okay. The crowds are good, but you should have seen the crowds at the two of the regional finals. Regional finals. One of them drew, what, like 2,800 people to a regional championship game? Another one drew like about 3,500 or 4,000. The crowds were not good, and because you get caught up, and you know, it becomes like a rumor, the women's NCAA tournament. They talked a year ago about moving the women's tournament back a week. I mean, I read a thing the other day where some people are saying we should move the women's season back a full month. And I think you either move it one way or the other, but you can't have them competing with the men's NCAA tournament. Regular season, again, as I said, not a problem. But the tournament is becoming a huge problem. Games I saw on TV, it's like, are you kidding me? Do they have anybody there? And I understand why they play at home sites. It's unfortunate, but that's what they need to do. And the good thing is that they moved it back a month or so, whatever. Michigan State could go back to hosting first and second round games because Michigan State does a terrific job. I mean, they averaged over 7,500 people a game this year. There were a couple of games they outdrew the Pistons on the same night. And I think there's an interest in Michigan State women's basketball, but I don't think, obviously, it's not at Michigan where they averaged 1,700 people a game this year. That's embarrassing. But I think they need to do something to the women's NCAA tournament.
Yes, I would agree because I've seen a lot of games. There's hardly anyone there,
yeah.
And if they don't have these home site games, it really is embarrassing. If you look at games that are placed on a neutral site venue, it's really embarrassing. Something though, so the women need to do something with that game. I know they want to put it on the same scale of the men, but let's face it, they just don't have the support that the men have.
No, they don't, and that's unfortunate. But I really think the NCAA tournament is their showcase, and it just gets swallowed up by the men's tournament, I'm afraid.
Yes. Well, let's talk a little bit of prep sports, Mick.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, the spring sports are starting to come on, and there's some spring sports are doing quite well, and there are a few other sports, and they're not doing quite as well. But for the most part, spring sports are pretty good. It gives athletes a chance to continue if they're really strong in the winter workouts. These spring workouts really helps them to stay in shape for the whole year, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think we've been blessed this spring,
yes.
Unlike a year ago, which was an absolute nightmare with all the rain and the cold that we had, I think teams were able to get outside early, especially like baseball, softball teams, and get some quality work done in. They were able to open the season on time, the regular season, when they start playing their games. And I think it's been a really good spring so far for them.
Yes, it is. And with baseball coming up and track and field, how do you look at track and field? Do you see we have any really outstanding athletes that can put forth some really good times in track and field this year?
Yeah, Erin is a very good young lady at Rochester High School, I believe. And she won the national 800-meter indoor race in New York and set a national record, and she finished second at the Foot Locker last year, and she's coming on like crazy. She's only a junior, and I expect big things out of her this spring, but I don't know if we have any other there is a good sprinter at Cass Tech, a girl who's outstanding, who's going to University of Florida, but I don't know if we have that many elite track people this spring.
Yeah. Yes. Now, you and I will be making the circus on the summer basketball scene that many of the schools put their own individual tournaments on. Do you see basketball getting worse in that, we just don't seem to have that kind of quality players like coming out of Detroit and Flint like we used to have? It's like they're just struggling. We'll see like maybe one or two players, but it's not, it used to be like tons, like 8, 9, 10 players, but we don't have that anymore.
Well, you can't in Detroit because the population base has just changed so much. People aren't in Detroit, living in Detroit like they were 20 years ago. It's not even close. And families have moved out to the suburbs and across the same thing with Flint. Those people, they had to close Flint Central. Whoever dreamed they would close Flint Central?
Yes.
And Detroit Public School Leagues are going to close. They're going to close more schools this year. So, yeah, when you have a change in your population base, then you're going to see differences, and that's the biggest thing. It's not to say that Detroit PSL teams can't compete in Class A basketball. They certainly can, and they have, and they will. But it's not the way it used to be, that's for sure.
Okay, we've got a caller for you on the line. Let's go up to Saginaw. We got Michael for you. Michael, how you doing?
There, Earl.
Okay.
I got a good question for you. Yeah, she in there. Hold on. Hey, Earl, I got to ask Mitch McCabe about Keno Davis being hired at Central Michigan.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to know, why is a lot of these coaches, it's like they can't hire no local basketball coaches in the state of Michigan at these universities. I just want to know why is that too, and also why are so many of our kids now in Detroit going to the SEC to play football?
We don't have that many in the SEC in football, I don't think. Right? Okay. Do we?
No.
No, we don't have that many.
Do we got that guy? What's his name? He from Madison Heights in the suburbs in Detroit.
Oh, yeah, you get occasional kids, but we've always had occasional kids go down to the SEC or the Pac-10.
I know, like Arnett, he went to Tennessee, but he transferred to Michigan State. And
right.
Nick Perry,
at Southern
USC.
Cal.
Mm-hmm. But I just want to know, like, Saginaw Valley got an opening for a college coaching for basketball, and Central already filled theirs. But it's just like I don't see the Easterns and the, I know Eastern's got a pretty good coach in Rob Murphy now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I just want to know what is with the state of Michigan and their talent level. It's like the directional schools recruit more out of in Ohio and Indiana and. I figured that if we just could keep some of our best basketball players in state, like the U of D is finally doing, they realizing that we'll be competitive every year in the NCAA. I appreciate taking my call. I'll take it off there.
Well, the thing is, the emergence of Oakland University in Division I has hurt the MAC schools a little bit. I know it's really hurt the University of Detroit in the past. And, you know, in Michigan State get their choice, but you got to go where you're going to, you know, be able to sign players. And I mean, Central Michigan just, you know, fired Ziegler. I mean, he was a Detroit Cody guy, and they got Keno Davis, who was the, you know, National Coach of the Year when he was at Drake, and then he went to Providence and things didn't work out there. I mean, I don't know who he would have hired. You know, I mean, DJ, you know, at Michigan State. You know, I would have liked to hope that he would have gotten an interview at Central Michigan. I don't know if he did or not, but I think DJ would be a terrific head coach. But this guy was the National Coach of the Year at one point, and I know that Central Michigan wanted to get away from the caliber of player that was coming into Central Michigan, where kind of the emphasis was on the AAU scene. And I know you have to recruit AAU players, but you have to make sure they have the right mentality coming into a school, and they want to be in Mount Pleasant, and they want to play for Central Michigan. Now, at Saginaw Valley, I mean, I'm not the AD, but I'd love to call up Mike Thomas at Kalamazoo Central and say, would you like to coach Division II level? Because he was an assistant coach at Northwood before he went over to Kalamazoo as a head coach, and I think Mike is just a tremendously sharp guy. I think he'd be a terrific recruiter, but, you know, I don't know what Saginaw Valley is looking for, but I would certainly go after somebody young and energetic like Mike, although he probably looks younger than half the players on the team.
You know, Mick, that for the Mid-American schools, as we know, they have a problem. That minimum requirement, they got to keep like 15,000 to keep their Division I-A status. Do you see that even being a bigger impediment, or can they overcome that eventually?
Oh, you can overcome it. I mean, I was in 1984. I was covering Eastern Michigan football in addition to my other duties, and that's when they had the MAC attack, and the Mid-American Conference wanted to throw them out of the MAC. Mm-hmm. And because of that same thing, they weren't drawing any people. And in 1987, 4 years later, they won the MAC championship and went to California and won the California Bowl, too. But Eastern Michigan said, we are going to draw 15,000 people a game, and they did. I don't know if Eastern Michigan is that kind of leadership. What they do is, you know, they get sponsorship money, and they actually buy tickets from themselves. Eastern does, to be able to try and raise the attendance rate. It's idiotic, but that's what they have to do to get to that level. And, you know, you wonder if the whole conference wouldn't be better off as Division I, 1AA league.
Hey, Mick, I want to thank you for joining me. It's always a pleasure talking with you. And,
yes, sir.
And we'll talk again. We'll talk more sports, high school sports and college sports a little bit later on, my friend.
Anytime, Earl.
Okie dokie.
See you later.
Talk to you later, Mick. Bye. Yep, bye-bye. And that's Mick McKay from the Detroit Free Press talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
As public schools across the country slash budgets, some parents pick up the slack to pay for pencils, salaries, or
someone to come and pick lice out of kids' hair.
Education reporter Kyle Spencer talking with WNYC. Schools' new reliance on parental support and what happens when some parents can't give. I'm Neil Conan. Conflicts over public school fundraising. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
This is Scott Pohl. Good to have you with us today. Our high is 60 degrees with some showers expected. Partly sunny today. Rain tonight and a slight chance of thunderstorms, the low 45. Cloudy tomorrow, a chance of rain before turning partly sunny, the high in the mid-50s. Mostly sunny and a high of 52 Friday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Well, I had a chance to talk with MSU coach Mark D'Antonio yesterday and had a chance to talk with him about a few players. One of the players we talked with Mark D'Antonio about was Connor Cook, the quarterback, the redshirt freshman, and he's in his third year in the program, and he may have to play on both sides of the ball at the spring game on Saturday because Andrew Maxwell won't be playing. They're not going to take any chances with him since Maxwell is scheduled to be the starting quarterback. But here's what Coach D'Antonio had to say about Connor Cook.
His game experience, I think this spring game will really help him a lot. You know, it'll be on TV, a little bit more exposure, a little bit more pressure, the public being there, a little more pressure, having to do it on a so-called gaming type environment. But he's got a great arm. He's got good poise in the pocket. He's learning the offense as we go here. He's a first-year freshman, so he's right on time, I think, with his progression in terms of how he's getting ready. As far as who would be the safety right now, tough to make that call. I'd say Drummond right now, but Williamson still seems to do some good things, but they need to be both more consistent. And, I continue to say we'll probably look at Trey Wayne there, and there'll be an opportunity for a young player. But it's not that they played bad, but they need to be consistent. If we're going to play to this level of football, our secondary's got to be squared away and sound so that they don't give up big plays, and particularly in the run. It's not their pass coverage, but they've got to make the tackle in space. But, we've got some good running backs, and, it's difficult to tackle Le'Veon Bell one-on-one sometimes.
Yes, and that's always been a wonder. I mean, guys, they've been talking about that the last couple of years of tackling better, getting better at the point of attack. And that's what Michigan State running backs and defensive backs have to do. They have to get better at the point of attack, but Michigan State isn't the only school that faces this problem. It just seems like the tackling has gotten worse over the years at the collegiate level. We just don't have the talent in coaching, whatever it is that these current players, they just don't seem to tackle as well as some of the past players. And that's, now when you got a guy one-on-one in the open, you really you almost have to pray that they're going to make the tackle. You just don't see that consistency coming up and hitting open guys in the open field. Well, let's hear one. It's another problem that Michigan State was having or having had over the years was the lack of depth. Well, I asked Coach D'Antonio, how does he feel about his depth at this point in the season? We'll see if we can get that back. We are hoping to talk a little bit about his depth and the players. And I know he had told me that he's pretty happy with the depth. That they've got a lot of players coming up that they have now that they're providing depth for the team. And that's what he thinks. He was pretty happy with the depth. And he says they're only recruiting another 14 to 15 players, and next year they'll probably just be recruiting 14 to 15 again. He said if you hear them getting up to 25, then you know they've lost a lot of players. But he says right now they don't have a lot of attrition in the program, but usually 14 or 15. Well, if we have that yet? Okay. So we'll be going on to our next cut. We're going to talk about the NFL draft coming up tomorrow night. But where about Cousins and Jarrell and Worthy? How are they going to do that? Worthy is still looked at as projected as being a first-round pick, and Cousins projected as going to be a third-round pick. And the other players could go anywhere. Trenton Robinson could be anywhere in the second, third, fourth round, somewhere in there. And the other players are looking at being in the lower rounds of the draft. And so it looks like Michigan State could have a very good draft. You might have five or six players get drafted from Michigan State in the draft. Only one or two, like they said, in the first or second round with Jarrell Worthy and Kirk Cousins. There'll be high draft picks. Other than that, maybe Robinson will be a high draft pick. But after that, they've got some linemen, some tight ends. They may get drafted probably in the sixth, seventh round. It'll be interesting to see how the Spartans do in the draft coming up. How you can say that the draft is relative to the number of players that you have. If you have a lot of players drafted, then that definitely means you had a pretty good season. And you hope that that shows up that Michigan State had a good season by the number of players that they had drafted. Well, let's hear from Coach D'Antonio. We don't have that yet. Well, let's see. So,
I don't know. Can't get the cuts to play.
Okay. So
I tried.
Well, I guess we'll have to try something else, though, since the cuts wouldn't play there. It looks like we had a few problems with trying to get them coming up today, so we'll have to look at that later. We have one other leader, so we can try to get that one, I think. And talking about Coach D'Antonio was talking about the leaders of the team and the leaders that are developing on the team, and he talked to a lot of us about how the leadership is developing, and he said Fofanuti is one that's developing quite well in the leadership venue, and so we're hoping that some others are coming up as well. So do you have that leadership up there, or is they coming up? Or okay, well, we'll talk some other sports. We'll go on and we'll talk some other sports right here on AM 870 WKAR. The draft is tomorrow night, and a lot of us will be tuned in 8 o'clock tomorrow night on ESPN, and we'll look forward to the draft. And the first round is going to be very good because we all know who the first two players are going to be. After that, it'll be interesting to see who goes third. Will it be Trent Richardson? Will it be Tannehill, the quarterback? Or will it be someone else? But after those first two picks between Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III, after those two, then we'll see which way will the draft be going. Will it be a cornerback or will it be an offensive lineman? It'll be interesting to see how the draft goes after that. So Stanford might have four or five players all together drafted in the first round. They've got a lot of they have defensive linemen. They may have a offensive lineman in that first round, a tight end in the first round, and Stanford. That you haven't heard a lot about that, but they could have up to four to five players projected at going in the first round. So that's something we'll be looking at the draft. How good is and Stanford supposedly is reloading, and that's a team that's on the upswing, even losing the Luck. They've got some players coming in there. It looks like David Shaw is doing a very good job with Stanford there. So we'll continue to see and observe Stanford and how they're going. It'll be interesting to look at some of the other teams in the Pac-10. Look at the new Arizona coach, Rich Rodriguez, see how his players do. He's got a quarterback, Foles, going. We'll see how he goes and some of the other players. It'll be interesting just looking at the draft from players that we've seen and that we followed. How well does Alabama do in the draft? Nick Saban, we know, had a very strong team last year, no doubt. How will those players do in the draft? It'll be interesting to see. So how do you think the players are going to do when you look at the draft overall? And have you really broke down the draft? And I'm talking to you, Jacob. Have you really broke down the draft? How do you see it going?
I haven't really taken a good hard look at it quite yet, but it's always a fun time and a fun experience. I would imagine Alabama does pretty well in the draft. They come out with some pretty elite players, so it's always interesting to see that first round and see where certain players fall and where they go, and obviously a lot of it depends on the team and their needs and whoever's, you know, drafting where. But it'll be an interesting experience, and it's a long experience. My gosh, they just expand this thing and
yes,
make it so long.
Now.
So
yes,
my word. But you know, that's the demand is there for it, and the interest is there for it. So you can't blame them.
Yes, I never thought that I would see the combine becoming such a big draft thing, and people would sit and actually watch guys run, catch passes, run the 40, run the cone drills, and all that stuff. And they've turned that into to a draft phenom as well. So people love their football and every aspect of football. So I guess I can't be surprised at anything that happens in the football venues anymore.
Yeah, everything around the draft and the offseason really has become a spectacle. Has become kind of an event for everybody to watch, and it's, you know, that's for people who love football. That's how they get their fix.
Yes. Now, what did you think about the new thing with New Orleans and Mickey Loomis, their GM?
Yeah, my goodness, they just can't catch a break. It's an interesting allegation, and it's something I don't think a lot of people thought of, which is that, you know, apparently the GM before him had a, you know, an earpiece in his suite to listen to the Saints coaches during the game or game day, you know, for the Saints and whatnot, which I never even thought of a GM doing that. And I don't know if that's a widespread thing in organizations. I don't know. But then the allegation is that Loomis then switched it so that he was able to listen to the opponents, which is, you know, is something that you don't really think of, but would be a rather invisible and devious thing to do. I mean, that would be a very hard thing to catch what was going on unless somebody, you know, who had set it up leaked it. But, you know, and of course, you know, the Saints came out and said this is 1,000%, you know, false and whatnot. But, you know, of course they say that, we don't really know, but it would be just another thing to add to that, and would be, you know, just kind of crazy for that to be happening.
Yes, and that's the thing about that. You know, we heard that they say it's crazy, but I always say, hey, in football, you know, the mantra is you do whatever it takes to win. And so I'm not surprised to hear about something like that happening. I just say it's football. What do you expect? You expect teams to play and win with integrity, or do you just expect teams to win? And I think most people just expect teams to win. I don't think winning with integrity is any part of the equation.
Yeah, and I'm curious how many other, you know, spying has been kind of a big thing in the NFL in the last decade or so, and curious how many other franchises have something similar set up, because like I said, it'd be so easy to set something
sure.
like that up in your, you know, and what's the NFL going to do, you know, do inspections of every stadium before the season or like every week, and you just imagine the cost of that. So I would be interested to see, you know, how many organizations do something similar. I wouldn't be surprised if it's a couple, but I'd be kind of surprised if it was everybody.
Yes, that would be a surprise. How big and how rampant is it? You know, it's hard to tell how deep and how devious people are being. But hey, we can say baseball. They've been stealing signs and doing all kind of stuff in baseball for years. That's no surprise. They've been doing all kind of stuff. Basketball, they do all kind of stuff. It's like every sport. And I know people don't want to hear it, but for whatever reason, people think that our sports should be true blue, or they should be, following rules and regulations. When all they want to do is people just want their teams to win. Mm-hmm. I don't think it matters too much if they win honestly or with integrity. They just want their teams to win, and I understand that, I respect that, and but that's the way it's always been for the most part. You just want your team to win. You know, if you can win by breaking a rule or two, so be it, as long as your team gets the W.
Yeah, I think there are fans out there that are like that, but then, you know, we are kind of, these games are billed to us as they are, you know, they're fair games, you know, the better team won, you know, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, you just don't see a lot of what goes on behind the scenes, and something
right.
that you might not even think about, like, you know, miking and spying on the, you know, opponent's coach's box, something that really is quite simple, but no one ever, you know, really kind of considers might be going on. And I think there are people that kind of just, you know, that take it seriously and get irritated when something like this happens because they assume that, you know, it's fair and square and they don't think that it's going on.
Yes, that's for sure. But we'll keep our eye, because it's funny how there's always something coming up. Now, I saw a little item in the paper today. You'll probably get a little chuckle at this one, Jacob, that you know, I saw this thing. It was in the transactions column. It was a little thing that said Ohio State hired a rifle coach. Now, I didn't know rifle was a or shooting was a well, that was a. I know like some colleges that is out west that you have shooting
Montana,
teams. I didn't think Ohio State had one, but apparently they hired a rifle coach. I just hope that Michigan and Michigan State fans don't get in the way of Ohio State guy with some guns over there.
Ohio State, you know, if they can make something a sport down there, they do it. They have. They probably have, I don't know this for sure, but they have to have the most number of varsity sports
in the Big Ten. They've got 27 right now.
They have 27. They have a ton of varsity sports and sports in general. And I don't know where you find a riflery coach or how you go through that, you know, that grueling selection process or whatnot. I'm sure whoever they hired is a fantastic riflery coach and they'll be very successful.
Yes, and they may have the only school that does it in the Big Ten, so they might just be recruiting, facing a competition on a national scale.
Yeah, I would imagine. I can't imagine there are many schools east of the Mississippi that have a riflery program. Maybe down south, I don't know.
Yes, so it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. But yes, Ohio State hired a new rifle coach. So I guess congratulations to Ohio State.
Yeah, way to go.
Yeah, and the guy's going to be making a little paycheck there. So I guess that's a.
How much do you pay a riflery coach?
Yeah, that's
I
a
wonder.
Good question.
What's a contract for a riflery coach go for nowadays?
Yeah, can we find out? Maybe you can put a call in down there. Maybe they'll tell you what the rifle coach pays for.
We could submit some you know documentation. We could do a FOIA or something. If we really wanted to snoop around, I'm sure we could find out.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's one of those things. Hey, give us a call. Our lines are open at 355-9527, toll free 877-9527-870. Now, I'll be going over to the draft when we leave here. As you know, Michigan State is going to be having their draft among the players. One thing I always find interesting about the draft, Jacob, is, you know, what do the players, who do they think are the best players on their team? You know, we'll get a chance to see how they look at the draft and how the players, the teams will be chosen among the players. But it's always curious to see who do the players think are the best players. We know the coaches have their ideas who the best players are, but it's interesting to hear who the players think are the best players on the team.
Yeah, that is always fun to hear, because when you do get into the season, really in any sport, it's always about the team and everyone talks about the team. And if you ask anybody who the best player is, they always say, well, we did it as a team and, you know, yada, yada, yada. They always give you that line. And of course, they know behind the scenes, you know, who the best talent is. So, yeah, it is always kind of fun to see how they rank each other in order within a team like that. So, yeah, that's always it's a fun way to do it, too. It kind of, you know, makes it kind of a lighthearted thing, and it's enjoyable.
Yes, you know, usually the quarterbacks would be picked. After the quarterbacks, that's what we're interested to see. Who do the team think out? Maybe the best DBs, maybe the best linemen, the best linebackers, the best defensive linemen. So that's always something to look at to see what players think, who are the best players, because Michigan State, we know, has got a lot of depth on their team.
Yeah, absolutely. And also how they value players. You know, what positions do you value when you're picking a team like that? So, it's it'll be interesting, and I think it's going to be a good spring game coming up this Saturday.
Yes, one thing we know is Michigan State has a ton of linebackers. I mean, the depth of linebacker is incredible. So I imagine we'll probably see most of the linebackers going in the early rounds, that first, second, and third string linebackers or team linebackers. They'll probably go pretty early in the draft.
Yeah, that makes sense. And, we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, linebackers you see coming in there. And, it's kind of a crapshoot when you get past the quarterback position as to what positions will be taken next.
Yeah, the only thing that's unfortunate is that we won't get a chance to see, Andrew Maxwell. We'll have to wait till the fall to see him.
Those football fans are going to be chomping at the bit to see him. It's going to be exciting.
Yep, and we'll just have to wait and see how he does after the spring and fall practice, and then we'll just have to wait and see how good he'll do. Hey, we want to thank everyone for listening. Thank everyone for calling. We invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. You've been listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Call us up Join us in the afternoons right here on AM 870, right here at WKAR in East Lansing. And we certainly want to wish you a safe and pleasant evening. And we'll see you tomorrow right here on WKAR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.